just want to thank you, Damien, for encouraging us last session as well. And I was really encouraged, I think probably like most of you, that he actually had to back up and read a few verses. Did anyone get encouraged with that? But I did go up to him and I said, I would be more encouraged if you would actually have a couple of bad sermons altogether, you know, because I've never really heard any. And he said that he would mail me a few. And so... So, Lanczi is in Budapest, Hungary, and he's going to be sharing with us now. And I keep hearing back all these reports about what's going on in Budapest, and it's so exciting. It really is exciting. Roger Wing was sharing about how he in his prayer, that it feels like what it felt like in the 60s, right before the Jesus People movement really exploded. And I have felt like that in England. It seems like it's getting set up for that sort of thing. I mean, we don't know, but it feels like it. It seems like it. And so certainly what's going on in Budapest seems to indicate that as well. Just so many people getting saved, and not just getting saved, but just the excitement and the, you know, just that passion for the Lord. And so I'm looking forward to getting back over there. I haven't been there for a while, so I'm looking forward to hearing also from Lanczi, just firsthand, as he shares with us some of the things that are going on. So, where's Lanczi anyway? Oh, there you are. Okay.
Hello. Budapest. My name is Lanczi Nemeth. I am pastoring the new church in southern part of Budapest. And if you are wondering why everything is happening so blessed in Budapest, it's not because of me. It's because of Phil Metzger. Is he here? No. Putting joke aside, part of it is him, honestly. He's humble. He's a person who is easy to connect with. And he's a guy of vision. And... it's not just Budapest, I believe it's all of Hungary. I mean, there is more than 20 Calvary chapels now in Hungary, and he has a vision for planting more here, more there. It's just really, really awesome. So it's part of it is having mighty men of valor around, you know, and you all are mighty men of valor. I want to tell you that. Yesterday we were talking about, you know, how strange we are because we are willing to die, if you remember. And there is only two letters difference between strange and strong. So being strange might be also really close to being strong. I apologize for my English. My pronunciation is not really good. English is only my third language. So please forgive me. Also, if I use words that maybe in your view are not appropriate, I'm sorry, I learned my English from missionaries, so I'm not sure which one is good for a Bible study and which one is not. So, also, to at least grasp anything from this mess that I'm getting ready to load on you, you must understand that I was born and raised in a country that is not existing anymore. It's called Yugoslavia. You were thinking Middle Earth, right? No, it was Yugoslavia. And I was born in the north part of a republic of Serbia. My mom is Croat. My father is Hungarian. So who am I? I don't know. I'm ethnically mixed up. But I usually say I'm messed up. So I also used to be a punk. So I have a weird way of thinking. So just get ready that we might jump everywhere. But after all this, you are thinking, how did this guy ended up here and getting a microphone? That's a good question. I just figured out that yesterday, like 5 or 6 days before the conference, I get an email from Dave Sylvester asking me to teach a men's session. And I was like, you just don't get an email from Dave Sylvester. Any of you got an email from Dave Sylvester? No, you see?
You're the only one that responded.
Yeah. I was the only stupid enough to respond. So anyhow, I mean, I was brainstorming, why would Dave Sylvester ask me to teach? You know, I'm 10 years in ministry, but so what, you know, so do you, or many of you are in ministry for a long time. And And then I arrive Sunday night, and I find out that my family gets the best room in all of the property. I mean, it's Pastor Chuck was sleeping in that bed, okay? So it is a little suspicious, the least, right? And I thought it was all Phil Metzger who set it up for me, and he wants something from me. That's why he does all this. But then it turns out that it's all because last year, what we went through with this whole church plant and all the attacks we have went through. And I already thanked you this Monday, for your prayers last summer. And the ministry is going well. This new church plant was based on a group of two groups of home fellowships in the southern part of Budapest that were the biggest, that were attending Calvary Budapest, that we call now the Central Calvary, because we have three already in Budapest. And they are the core group. Then we got some people who got saved. Then we got some people who are now lately joining the church. So if I tell you that after a year we have approximately 80 adults and 20-something kids, you're probably going to hate me, because you are laboring for years and you might have 20 or 30 people. But it's a different thing. Something is truly happening in Budapest, and something is truly happening in Hungary. And so please don't compare it with everything you are doing, because it's a totally different thing. And also about being a mighty man, Eliezer, yesterday, something I want to reconnect with that. Maybe you are the only guy there where you are. Maybe everyone else left there, you know, then you are Eliezer. I want you to know that. It's really important that we hear these big things happening in Ukraine or here or there. You are where God called you to be, and you are God's mighty man. And just endure and hold on to that sword that was mentioned yesterday and also today, Pastor Damien Kyle. You know, obedience to God's word and just holding on to the word of God. It's really, really good. So when I got that email that only I responded to, I already knew what I want to talk about immediately, because there are two things constantly on my heart, and one of those things is missions. Well, I don't need to tell you anything about missions. You are doing missions. So the other option is when that pops out in those moments is ministry towards men. And I prepared like I researched this subject for many years now, for four or five years. I'm reading a lot about it. When I was serving in Croatia, I really needed to start a ministry towards men, because it was a war-torn city. Everybody was messed up. There were no leaders in the church. I desperately needed elders, so I knew I need to raise them up. So I was like, okay, where do I start? What do I do? And I poured all my research and all the knowledge I was able to put together into a little sermon. And then God messed up my plans, because Pastor Bill Gallatin was speaking about the biography of David. Then yesterday we heard about Eliezer. And then while Pastor Craig was talking about Eliezer, God said, I want you to share about what I taught you through the life of Joshua recently. So we're going to try to cover the first 11 chapters of the book of Joshua. And then I will, if there will be any time, I would like to give you some glimpse of, if you want to start a ministry towards men in your church, in your city, some basic guidelines. I mean, nothing fancy, nothing big, but I really want you to start focusing on ministry towards men. So I really, if you are not doing that already. So it will be first about Joshua, and then if there will be any time left, I will try to pour anything about men's ministry to you, okay? Okay, let's not waste time. Yesterday, the expression Band of Brothers came up. If you have seen the movie Band of Brothers, then you will remember what I'm going to tell you about now. In that movie Band of Brothers, there is a, towards the end of the 10 episodes, there is a scene when news photographers and news people are going into the trenches in Germany interviewing American soldiers. And, you know, they are trying to make this movie to sell in America, like how great it is to fight against Adolf Hitler and how awesome it is to fight for freedom of Europe and all that. And they ask this question, so what do you fight for? And then these like empty faces look at them and they're just silent. They don't even want to answer that question. And then some of them answer the question. Some of them say like, you know what? I'm not fighting against Adolf Hitler. I'm not fighting for the freedom of Germany or the freedom of the Jews. I'm fighting for the guy right next to me in the trench. That's who I'm fighting for. And that's important. That's also something I want to encourage you. The simple fact that you continue your fight, that you are not giving up, encourages the other men in this room. Year after year, when we come back and we see the very same faces, it's so good to see that you are not giving up in your city. It's so good to see that your sword is out and you are ready to fight. Then standing up and not giving up the territory, death. I already talked about the strange and strong difference, only two letters. And you and I are strange. I want you to have that picture of you. You are strange. When you go home and you say, hey, you know, I'm a missionary. I'm called to this republic or this country. And they're like, where is that? Is that on this earth? You know, what language do they speak? Do they still eat people, you know? You are weird, you know, because you have on your heart a nation. You have on your heart a city. And you are weird, and that's okay. Because I and many of us who are missionaries are very proud of you. Because we are the same weird people. So just remember that movie Band of Brothers. If you haven't watched it, watch it and learn. Fight also. Not just one thing is we are fighting all for God, but we're also fighting for each other. We are keeping each other's backs. If you give up your trench, we might lose territory also. So just be like Eliezer, like we heard yesterday. Book of Joshua, sorry, I'm just jumping everywhere. Ministry, especially missions, is a fight. It's a fight. It's we are gaining territories that maybe have never belonged to Protestant Christianity. We are maybe regaining some territories. We are maybe taking over churches or areas where there was work before and there is a foundation to build on. But with a good chance, you are starting something in that city that has never been there. And in that way, you are like Joshua and Israel, going into the land God has promised you and going into the place where God wants to do great things. And in that way, Joshua can be a great example to us. In many ways, he can be a great example to us. But we are in enemy territories. There will be attacks. There are attacks. And we can learn a few things from Joshua. And I would like to focus on at least four today, and I will try to be very quick. First thing is in chapter 1. And I will just read a few words. It's between 1st and 7th verse in the first chapter of Joshua. But what we see here is that Joshua was honest with God and he admitted to God how scared he was of the situation. Look at what God is speaking into his life. Second verse. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan. So he speaks to him what to do. And then verse 3, every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. Verse 5, no man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Only be strong and very courageous. Verse 7. Verse 9, have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Joshua, I mean, not many people in the Bible get such an encouragement from God. You don't see it in every book of the Bible. You don't see it in the life of every apostle. You just don't see it. This is something very unique, and this is something very special. Everywhere you go, it's yours. Don't be afraid of any man. just be strong and be courageous, because I will be with you and I will never leave you. I am there with you in your city. I am there with you in your trench. I will never leave you. And don't be afraid of anyone, because I'm giving you that land. Isn't that encouraging? That's something God is telling you and me today. The place where you are, God is there with you and He will not leave you. The place where you are, you only need to be strong and courageous. That's all that is required of you. That's all that is required of you. Not giving up. That's the only thing. And you know what? It's funny. Joshua here, he probably was very scared. I mean, God never told anyone so many times, be strong and courageous. Don't be afraid. You don't see in the Bible anywhere else within one chapter so many times. It says, just be strong, don't be afraid, you know. Joshua was probably weeping before God. Moses is dead. I need to lead this crowd. I need to go into a land that we have never been to. I mean, Joshua and Caleb were, but the nation was not. I need to conquer those giants. I need to conquer those cities. Lord, how? And I think on Monday, one of the pastors said, you know, don't be afraid of just crying out to God. And that's what we see here with Joshua. He was crying out to God. Otherwise, God would not pour so much encouragement into him. I remember when we moved to Vukovar, Croatia, I was stupid. I had no idea what I was doing. I had this radical call. I really knew I have to go there. I arrived to the mission field with a 2-month-old baby. I was just coming off of a really great time of pastors and elders meeting in Vita. And literally from there, we packed everything into the car and we drove down to Vukovar. And we unpack, we go to the closest store to buy food. And I'm there. I don't know anyone in the city. My wife and I are pushing this shopping cart and our little baby is in there. And I started weeping in that store. I was like, I'm out of my mind. What the heck am I doing here, you know? Alone. There is no team with me. There is no, like, 3 other men and couples with us. It's just me, my wife, and that little baby that is totally trusting us. And she has no idea that we have no idea what we are doing, you know? But you know what? The first 2 years of that ministry was probably the best time of my ministry. Because every step was led by God. Every step was anointed by God. And I was crying often before God. And I was just weeping and I was asking Him, you know, just give something, Lord. And He always gave, not something, but many things. So that's the first thing we see with Joshua, that he's open, he's honest with God. He says what he feels. He's not like, you know, very often we are like, Lord, there is this problem. Would you please take care of it? You know, he's honest. He's probably weeping before God, and then God is pouring into him. Second thing I want us to see is, it is mostly not what you are doing. The work is being done by the Lord. They have learned that lesson a few times. They are hard learners. We heard that, I think, from Pastor Gale or Bill Galton, one of the more mature men who were like saying how the apostles were hard learners. Just remember, at the Jordan, what did happen? Who split the Jordan? It was God's presence, the Ark of the Covenant. Whenever the moment the priests put the Ark of the Covenant into the Jordan, that's when the Jordan split. Okay, then what happened at Jericho? Was it the great siege weapons of Israel that took down the walls? No. It was 6 days of prayer and worship, pretty much. You know, so the 7th day, you know, you do that 6-7 times and then just blow your horns and yell loud, and then the walls will fall down. Great strategy, right? When I was serving in this war-torn city, I was meeting many, many soldiers and ex-soldiers and war veterans. The war was there in 1991, and the war was going on in Croatia till 1995. And I asked them about strategy often. How were you defending the city of Vukovar? How were you attacking a city or a village? And one of the things they said, you never do the same thing twice. You never attack in the same way twice. You never defend in the same way twice. Because if you ever do the same thing the third time, they're already planning on it and you are dead. These guys were going around Jericho. All the soldiers were marching there. So they were showing, hey, this is all our army, okay? This is the weapons we have, and we're going to tear down your walls. You never do that in war. You don't make your children and women and everyone just marching around and showing everything you've got. You don't do that. And they did it. And then after, you know, marching around, how did the walls go down? They were really loud. I mean, they can yell. Jews can really yell. Have you heard a Jew yell? They can break down walls. No. It was God. At Jericho, it was God. Honestly, I can't wait to go to heaven for many reasons, obviously. But one of the reasons is these situations in the Bible. Just imagine those soldiers when they heard Joshua's command, and we're going to march around Jericho 6 times in 6 days, and then the last day, you know, and then the soldiers were like, now that's a plan, you know. Or those within the walls of Jericho, what are these Jews doing? You know, the first day, they're like, okay, they are marching. Second day, they are marching. Third day, they are marching. What are they doing, you know? These are like funny places to visit. I really want to see that on DVD. Later, we see that God gives strategies at Ai, the Battle of Ai. Then, when the kings are approaching the Israeli army, God gives specific strategies, where to hide, what to do, how to attack them. But even then, God is the one who gives the strategy. Very important. Because of the obedience, they are doing it. That's nice and all that. But come with me, Joshua chapter 10. It's mind-blowing, and it's something I love and hate in the same time in ministry we do. We see throughout these 10 chapters that God says that, hey, I'm fighting for you. I'm fighting for Israel. But chapter 10, verse 11, and actually the end of verse 11, I really want you to remember this. There were more who died from the hailstones than the children of Israel killed with the sword. And I love and hate this part, because it's not about me. I mean, it's awesome, you know, I get support, I serve God, you know, I do the best thing possible on earth. But in the end, it's not what I'm doing, but it's what God is doing. I can hold on to the sword, and I should. And you know, I have to be there, but it's God who is doing the work. It's not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord. It's that simple. And it's, you love it or hate it, I do both, you know. It's just, I'm there and God is doing the things. In the same time, it's very releasing. It's not you. It's not about you. You don't have to figure out the way. You don't have to do it. You just have to do what God says. And in the case of Israel, they had to go, they had to conquer territories. In your case, it might be just, hey, endure. Don't retreat like Eliezer did. Or not Eliezer, the other Jews. Just stick out like Eliezer did. Just not give up. Hold on to your sword. And, you know, very often our ministries, the city where you are, might seem like, you know, when somebody is going into a jungle and cutting out a path with the machete, or what's the name of that? Yeah, okay, that one. The big knife. You know, you are the one, in a way, preparing the way for other missionaries and other works to come after you. And it's not easy to cut. If you ever seen that in a movie, documentary movie, it's not easy. Those guys are the toughest guys out there. They are the local guys. They know what they are doing. So just hold on to and just know you are there. You are chopping with your sword some things, but God is doing much more through the fact that you are there. Okay, the third thing I want us to learn from Joshua is is he did whatever God said. So do whatever God says, no matter how stupid it seems like, how crazy it seems like. Just do whatever God says. Joshua had some weird commands, okay? Circumcision before a battle. Doesn't sound like fun or smart either, you know? They just crossed the Jordan River, and the Jordan is back. It's flowing. There is no way where to go. Jericho is in front of them. God says, now it's good time for some circumcision. And Joshua does it. Then after circumcision, after they finally got healed, and okay, we are ready for battle, what's happening? Let's have the Passover dinner. You know, let's celebrate. And just remember, Psalm 23, in front of your enemies, I prepare a table full of food for you. Right? We see that in Joshua. You know, they are getting ready to conquer. Take it easy. The promised land will not go away. It's going to be there. Let's have some good food first, okay? I love Christianity for many reasons, but one of them is food. Jesus was always eating and always drinking with sinners, and he was just always around eating. So that's really cool. Okay, then after celebration of Passover, what other weird commands he had to do? Besides crazy command that be strong and courageous. Yeah, I'm afraid. No, I command you, be strong and courageous, right? So walk around Jericho daily, we already said. It's stupid, but it worked. Chapter 11, Israel is facing an enemy they have never encountered. I mean, they have encountered Jericho, Ai, they have encountered more than 10 different kings and armies. But this one in chapter 11 is just totally weird. It's all the kings of north united against Israel. All of them. It's not like in the southern part of the Canaan that it was first one king, then five kings, then you know, it's all the kings. They say it was as many army as the sand on the beach. They have never faced such a multitude of army. But also they have never fought against horses and chariots. So Joshua is, you know, Lord, what are we going to do? This is an enemy. We have no idea how to fight. But I want us to see something. It became a routine for him after a while. An enemy, a situation I don't know what to do with. I'm going to ask God. He will tell me. And in chapter 11, verse 7. This is one of my favorite things about Joshua. He seeks God. God tells him what to do. And look verse 7, chapter 11, what's happening. So Joshua and all the people of war with him came against them suddenly. I love that about Joshua. God tells him something. Okay, let's do it. You see that frequently in the book of Joshua. Like, it's mentioned regularly, like, after he heard from God, he's doing it immediately. He's not wasting his time. It's amazing. I love that. He's not like us. I heard from God, and I will pray some more about it. And I will wait for some prophecy, or, you know, like, we think we are spiritual when we say, you know, I'm putting this fleece out, Gideon, yeah. I'm putting this in front of the Lord, so just to make sure. No, if God spoke to you, do it. Do it. Don't wait. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. If you know it's from God, don't hesitate. Do whatever he says, no matter how weird it sounds. But there is also a lesson that we need to learn from him concerning this that I already mentioned, seek God in every situation, every problem, because he failed in that also. And if you are like just a little like me, you have failed also a few times in your life. Not too many, but a few times. Joshua has failed before the first battle of Ai. We all know the story, right? It's a small city. Let's not take the whole army. Let's not even seek God. Let's just attack them. And 30-something Israelites die and they withdraw because they were not seeking God. Second time they are not seeking God is when everything is obvious. Here comes a nation from far. They are called Gibeonites. They say are there from far. Look at the wineskin. Look at the bread they left with from home. Look at their sandals, their clothing. They must have traveled for months. So Joshua again forgets to seek God. And he does a huge mistake. He was looking at the obvious, and he was not asking God. And there will be always in our ministry people who will try to manipulate us. Just like Gibeonites, they will try to cheat us. Just to be able to enter our church or just to talk us into ministry together. And I don't want you to misunderstand me. I'm not talking that we shouldn't be serving together with other churches and denominations. Actually, I'm very open for that as long as Christ is number one and not their denomination. But very often people from other churches come with this, let's do this for Christ. But then you end up doing something for their church. So be aware of that. It will totally seem like okay. It will totally seem like biblical, but your sixth sense will say like something's weird here. With the Gibeonites, Joshua, if he would only wait 3 more days, we see that 3 days after they figured out that Gibeonites are actually from really close. It's only 3 days walk. So whenever you get an opportunity that's maybe even like it seems awesome, it is awesome, always seek God first. You can avoid a trap like the Gibeonite trap. So please do that. Seek God before and after every situation. Have you done it correctly? Is it totally fine that you have done? Oh, do we have enough time? I was running through the lessons of Joshua really quickly. Do we have time? We have time, right? 11:50. Good. Okay. Something we see with Joshua is that when he finishes chapter 12, you know, we read during Moses they conquered these kings, during Joshua they conquered the other kings. What we don't see is after Joshua somebody taking charge. After Moses, there was Joshua. Joshua says, each tribe needs to go and conquer its own land. And we know the story, they don't. But what's even more sad, there is no someone to lead Israel after they conquered the land. There is no leader. Here comes the book of Judges. One judge after another. Israel is doing fine. Then they go down. Then they go up because a judge comes and helps them out. They cry to the Lord. Again, they are saved. There is no one man, or there are no few men to entrust the whole nation of Israel to. And all the way up till Saul, and then David, and then Solomon, and then downhill again. So I really want us to see that it's really important to train men. If you go into any church, surely you have ministry towards children, kids ministry. With a very good chance, you will have women's ministry in that church. Unfortunately, very often, there is no regular men's ministry in the churches. And then we are crying, you know, we don't have good quality men in our churches. We have all these women who are mature enough, and then we have these kids over here, you know, who are not ready to marry them. You are laughing because it's true, and you know. We are not investing time into our men, and if we are not investing, we can't expect fruits from it, right? So if you don't remember anything from the following few sentences I'm going to share, please remember when you go home and seek God to give you vision and just guidance how to start ministry towards men. I will try to sum up a few things that I believe are important for us to understand. And it all comes from that city, Vukovar, where I was serving. I inherited a church of 50, 60, 70 people. And there were different ethnic background. There were people who were actually fighting each other during the war. And then they got saved and they were going in the same church. But there were also people who were in concentration camps. There were also people who were kids when the war happened. And they were a whole mess. And I knew that if God calls me away one day from that city, there is one thing I want to accomplish by the time I'm there. I want these guys to grow up to be men. And it's weird when you are teaching a 50, 60-year-old man who was in concentration camp how to be a man, you know. But you need to figure out a way to get to that heart. And I was researching, I was reading a lot. Probably you know some good books about how to reach out, man. Some books that really helped me, I can share with you later if you want. Just come to me, I will tell you. But what helped me the most was a book by Pat Morley. You can buy it in most of Calvary bookstores in American churches. Pat Morley, No Man Left Behind. They build up a system how you, and they just give guidelines. They don't tell you, you do this and you're going to have successful men's ministry. No, it's not like that. It's giving you guidelines. Sometimes it's very American, sorry, no offense, but in Europe most of those things don't work. But it gives you a guideline how to figure out how to reach your man. And it was funny, you know. It said, look for a man code. And I was like, man code, what is that? It's something that in that community where you are serving, something that men do, something that makes them feel manly. And it's different. I was at one men's conference in North Carolina, Charlotte, and it's all about, I forgot the name, what's that racing? NASCAR. It's all about NASCAR. I mean the men's ministry room is filled with these huge tires and posters of these NASCAR drivers, and I was like, where did I end up, you know? You see, you have to figure out the man code of your own city, because if I would bring those NASCAR tires into my church, they would be like, I'm not coming here. So anyhow, in Vukovar, Croatia, the man code thing that was manly to do is cook something on fire and talk. Cook a potluck, you know. That's what men do. We cook, we make fire, and we talk. So, our men's ministry was, Pastor Kyle from Szeged was at our first men's ministry. I invited him to be the guest speaker, and we barbecued, and that's when after that we went over to the potluck thing. What we did is, let's gather around the fire. 5 o'clock, we start the fire, come. And men were coming, and we had the fire. And then we started cooking or baking or whatever, barbecuing, and I always had one person to share. It can be 10, 15, 20 minutes. I mean, again, I'm not giving you the recipe. You go back and you do this. Because maybe if you start cooking some Hungarian goulash, everybody will be like, what's wrong? No, find your man code and do whatever works in your city. I'm just telling you my example, what worked in this weird city. So you're gathering around that fire, eating and listening to lessons from the Bible. And I was hoping, you know, sooner or later they will start, you know, asking questions. When we ask them questions from what we shared with them, they might actually answer. It was all people who were hurt in the war. They were all these walls that needed to come down. And a regular Bible study would not work. You needed to change the environment for them to loosen up. And after the 7 or 8 months of doing this, I got really fat, you know. That too. But after 7 or 8 months, one of the men who was in concentration camp, he said like, hey, here's a funny story from the war. I was like, funny story from the war. Okay, let's hear it. I mean, we taught a Bible study, like a short 15, 20 minutes. Not real Bible study, but really just sharing from the heart. And then this guy says, like, let's share a funny story from the war. I was like, okay. Like, you know, I was down in the basement for 2 months, and I had this tooth that was hurting, like, really bad for weeks. And the war is going on, like, snipers everywhere, bombs falling, like, more than 2,000 bombs falling on that city per day. I mean, that's how heavy it was for 3 months siege. And this guy, after 2 months, I mean, his tooth must have really hurt. He was like, I'm jumping on my bike, and I'm going to go to the hospital. If I die on the way there, fine. If I don't, they take out my tooth, I bike back, fine too, you know. So anyhow, he makes it by God's miracle to the hospital. And no painkillers, nothing. They pull out. They have no idea which one. It's so swollen up, they can't figure out which tooth it is. So the doctor says he must have been tired also from all the operations and stuff. He says, like, I will pull out this one. And if it's not this one, you come back tomorrow, okay? And the guy said it totally, the doctor said totally seriously that. And this guy was like, you know what? You pull out both. I'm not coming back if I make it back once alive. So men's ministry meeting, you know, we try to do something spiritual with them. And a funny story from the war comes in. The other guy who was also in concentration camp after the war for a year and a half, he says, like, I have a funny story from a concentration camp. And he just went on, you know. But that's how men started to open up. 2 months later, the first man asked for a prayer because he was afraid of something in his life. All this to say, you need to find a way to reach down to the heart of the man. If you try, man, let's gather, let's open our Bibles in Leviticus, it's not going to work. They heard the Bible. They hear you 2 or 3 times a week in Bible studies. They need to be in a friendly environment where they are willing to open up, when they are ready to say, hey, I'm going through this, I'm going through that, I need prayer for this, I need prayer for that. So please look for a man code. If you haven't figured it out already, if it's a sport you don't play, never played, learn it, you know. If it's something that men do together in that city, it's a hobby they do, fishing or whatever, go with them. Be among them and do what they are doing. And I have a few more minutes, I hope. 12 o'clock. I have 15 more minutes. Come on. Let's open our Bibles at the book of Leviticus. No. Okay. I'm afraid this one last page will be blown away by the wind, so I need to be careful. How to start men's ministry besides figuring out how to reach them? You have to think in system. You have to think in system. It's not just once a week thing. It's not just once a month thing. It's many different things. How I suggest you start it is, it worked for me. How I started it was meeting them one by one. In the Balkans, it's when you want to meet with one man between 4 eyes and just focus only on him, it's coffee. It's Turkish coffee. If you know what Turkish coffee is, it's the most strong coffee in the world. You can chew the little pieces of coffee while you are drinking it. So pray for Tim and those guys who are in the Balkans, because they have to drink a lot of Turkish coffee to be able to reach the people in that city. I'm not kidding. Sometimes I couldn't sleep by night because I drank like 10 of those during the day. So. I know in America, it's going out for a lunch break together with another man. So I don't know what's in the country where you are serving, in Italy, in Germany, France, wherever you are from, England. Figure out what's that time of the day, what's that thing that people do in that community, and call up each week at least one man and meet with them and spend time with them. Month after month, week after week, and you will see within a few months, worst case within a year, that man will start opening up to you. But you have to be faithful in this. You have to reach out to him regularly. He needs to know that he can count on you. Every third week of the month on Tuesday, I'm meeting with him for coffee or for lunch or whatever. Make it something that he can count on. Another thing that I would suggest you start is something like our potluck thing. I don't know what's in your country. Maybe it's raw fish on the sea. I don't know where you are. I mean, whatever they are doing, whatever is manly, do that. Once a month, just gather men around, gather men around, whatever they feel comfortable with. And also, it's good to have something weekly if you can, like a breakfast thing, you know, or whatever. Just have a system, figure out a system, ask God for a clear vision. How can I reach those 5 or 10 or 500 men in our congregation? Because as many men you have in your church, all of them are your men's ministry. It's not just those who show up at the certain meeting. It's not just those men who show up at the cooking part. It's all men are your responsibility. All men you need to reach somehow. Another thing that I suggest you try, it's something I just tried and I'm really new to this and I have no idea how it's going to end up, but we need to put challenge on men. We need to challenge them out. One of the things to do is either like a once or twice a year a conference that your local men organize and we invite other men to that, or to do mission trip. I think that's even better. Once or twice a year, take them somewhere. Take them away from their home, take them away from their jobs, take them away from their secure environment. It does miracles. Take them to a mission trip. If you don't know where, take them to Split, to Croatia. He offered me a coffee for that sentence. Turkish coffee, yeah. So, I mean, just take them somewhere where they can... There can be like shaken, you know, uncertain, where they have to look to God only. There is no wife who's going to take care of the things. There is no pastor who's going to do the things. We men need to figure out what we're going to eat, when we're going to eat, what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. So challenge them. And it might sound, and I have to finish with this, it might sound weird, this whole man code thing I told you, because it sounds like very weird. Give men what they need in the circumstance of what they want, you know. And please understand, it's not that weird. Jesus was doing what men were doing in that time. He was sitting with them, eating with them, drinking with them, fishing with them, whatever, you know. And I really think we need to go out more of the four walls of the church. Also, I suggest to have the men's ministry, maybe not at the church campus, church building, but at somebody's house, in the yard, or out in the open park. Somewhere else, you know. So, don't misunderstand me. This whole man code is not some new agey stuff, you know. Or anything like that. It's absolutely biblical, you know. Just reach the men where they are, the way that you can reach them. And the last sentence, I promise, is a disciple of God is someone who, and you know this definition, I'm sure, a disciple is called to walk with Christ, to live like Christ, and to work for Christ. And we can't expect them to be doing all these three things if we are not giving them a chance. If we are just, you know, they got saved, you know, they are walking now with Christ, because of our Bible studies and good teachings, they might, you know, live like Christ, or they attempt to live like Christ, which is awesome, but there is also another step, work for Christ. And they won't serve in the church if you don't challenge them, if you don't reach out to them. So that was it. Now I could start to talk about missions and ministry, my other great topic I really love, but I'm not gonna. I just wanted you guys to focus on reaching the man in your city, in your church. And especially if, I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend you, but if your church is not mega church, and with a great chance in Europe it is not, if it's maybe like only 5 or 10 or 20 or 200 men, you have a better chance than poor Pastor Damien Kai with all the thousands of men, you know. It's start with those who you have, and you will see how it's going to change your church, how it's going to change, it's going to shine in your city. Okay? Thank you.